countless Sunday meetings, which is not my favorite. Sunday is the, you know, it's a chill day, but everybody sacrificed their Sunday, you know, to do the work.
Hello, beautiful WPKN listeners. I'm Isabel Barber. I'd like to welcome you to WPKN's Mic Check, which comes to you on WPKN every Sunday at 5:30 p.m. Our diverse roster of hosts presents a wide range of topics for discussion, focusing on global, national, and regional issues that affect our local community. Just as the phrase mic check mobilizes people to create a human microphone during public demonstrations and protest actions, this weekly program amplifies our community's many voices and brings them to the airwaves. This show will be posted on WPKN's archive site for the next 2 weeks. Go to archive.wpkn.org, choose the air date, and click on the show mic check, and boom, you'll have access to this recording. If you want to contact me, I can be reached at ibwpkn@gmail.com.
What do you want from your community? What would it look and feel like? Where would your kids play? How hard would you fight? There are communities around this country that are looking at their city and town budgets and really asking those questions. Here's Chris Raitt, a community member who lives in New London, Connecticut, talking about her vision to the New London City Council.
If you want to imagine for a minute a truly equitable budget, let's do that. An equitable budget could fund a dirt bike park in Bates Woods for our young people who love their dirt bikes so much. It would quiet our streets and center their needs. An equitable budget could build a youth center that we've needed for decades. An equitable budget could fund a mental health department able to respond to the 60% of New London calls for mental health services that go into 911. Can you picture it? Can you feel what it would be like to live in a city where we take care of our own?
You'll hear Chris's voice again as our story continues. Communities from Seattle, Washington to New London, Connecticut are taking a look at their budgets and creating what's called people's budgets. A people's budget is designed by a democratic process. It's a participatory budgeting process in which community members directly decide how to spend part or all of the public budget. As community members look at their budgets, one thing often stands out, and that is the amount of resources that are devoted to public safety. Much of this is in the form of police department budgets. Hearing Youth Voices is a nonprofit in New London, Connecticut, that has been doing a lot of work to limit the negative impacts of policing in both schools and the greater community. Here's Maya Shepherd, the executive director of Hearing Youth Voices.
Hearing Youth Voices is a political home for young people to come and sort of like bring and bear their whole selves without judgment, walk through the hard questions, make mistakes without being disposed of. And we are very curious about power and how it gets built, why it gets built, what's the roots. How do we share power and build communities of dignity and safety for all the people that don't have it right now?
In 2018, the American Public Health Association passed a policy statement around law enforcement violence as a public health issue. The finding was that while public safety is essential for public health, as a society, we've delegated this function almost wholly to law enforcement. And there's a lot of evidence that law enforcement violence in U.S. policing has failed to equitably deliver safety, placing an inequitable burden on the mental and physical well-being of socially and economically marginalized populations, i.e., people of color and poor people are disproportionately impacted by police violence. But of course, community activists have known this for a long time.
One of the demands since, you know, the inception of Hearing Youth Voices was like, how do we get police out of school, right? So end of 2019, we decide, okay, let's go for it. Let's start talking about it. So we do some strategic planning and we're like ready to launch. And then, you know, 2020, pandemic, hard launches, hard launch pandemic. And like we halt and we're just like meeting the needs of our people. We're like, we open up an emergency fund. We like, we're getting food to people and we're just like holding a lot of space. And then George Floyd is murdered. And before that, Breonna Taylor, right? And there's this welling of despair, right? Of anger, of frustration, and of like conviction to act. Like young people are like, okay, like we can't ignore what's happening. So young people do their thing that they do, which is organize each other and like organize the adults to say, this is what we want to do. And like, y'all are with us or not. And June 6th, we lead a protest. Thousands of people in the street and saying like, it's time to put our money where our mouth is.
Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring.
Our first demand. We demand that 35% of the New London Police Department 2020 budget be invested into services that support New London residents who are Black, Brown, and poor.
We demand an additional $760,000 be immediately reallocated from the New London Police Department 2020 budget to New London Public Schools.
We demand that New London Public Schools immediately sever their relationship with the New London Police Department.
Number four, we demand that the New London Police Department demilitarize immediately.
Maya and Chris Raitt, who you heard earlier, are very clear about youth being in the driver's seat for the development of a campaign that became known as Fed Up New London. Fed Up New London really informed the creation of the People's Budget campaign.
So it was 35% of the police department budget to be reallocated to youth services, mm-hmm. human services, education.
And young people decided that number. I remember that conversation where we were trying to figure out like what's the right percentage. And the young people leading the movement decided on that number, not because that was necessarily an end, but that felt like at least 35% needs to be mm-hmm. moved.
It was just a moment where a ton of things lined up, right? Like all of our alum were home, right? Because college had closed down, right? And like they're meeting, they're talking with each other and they're like, listen, like we came to be a part of this organization to do something. And so then launches Fed Up New London. We launch a petition, we get 8,000 signatures. We started talking to other community-based organizations like Cultured AF, which was a previous Black-owned cultural center across the street, like Majorie Temple, Fresh, Step Up New London, Green Party. And everybody was like, okay, like this aligns with both our organizational values, but just like the vision we have for our community. It took a ton of relationship building. Like, it took a ton of us, like, just agreeing to come to the same table, sort of put aside the differences that the nonprofit industrial complex can create around scarcity, around, like, the competition for funding, and, like, you know, like, we had to put a lot of that on the table and say we agree to disagree in some spaces, but we agree that, like, we can do this.
Part of what reinforced this feeling that the nonprofits could come together is because they had been coming together to meet a lot of community member need that came up during the pandemic. And they had been doing this without a lot of support from the city.
There's a real commitment by those elected officials currently to abdicate any responsibility around the public's and New London residents' sort of innate needs, right, for housing and food and healthcare. And that abdication of responsibility gets put onto the nonprofit system. So the nonprofit system then does its best to provide, in this case, a variety of different opportunities for folks to access food with all these sort of, you know, pop-up food distribution sites. And largely made up of volunteers, right? And then out of those nonprofits and volunteer efforts, needs arise, like needs for refrigeration to make sure the food doesn't go bad before you get it to the people. But then you've got multiple nonprofits asking for funds for refrigeration, and the city's sort of, you know, response to them when folks show up in significant numbers to ask for funding, the city's response is, seems like a redundancy of services that you're asking for. So that is what prompted the city acknowledged at some point that if there were a coordinator, mm-hmm. that perhaps we could eliminate some of the redundancies and requests for funding, mm-hmm. but takes no leadership in providing the finances for that leadership.
Yeah, and in fact, continuously, like every single council meeting that we've been to this year and have talked about this, there is this narrative around like the nonprofits need to work together. Mm. Like if we work together, we'll be strong and like it all will get done. And, you know, to that we say like we are working together, mm-hmm. and like we're working together for people's budget so that, you know, we could actually meet the need instead of just putting out the fires. It was a really beautiful process actually to see like people like tapping into their own like personal networks, like people calling their parents saying, hey, like, will you come to the city council meeting?
We are here at City Hall, the council chamber, and we're here, this meeting is held to receive comments from the community. Pertaining to the budget, you will have up to 3 minutes.
Good evening, all. Chris Wright, I think it's important for you all to know that communities across the state with similar population sizes to New London spend dramatically less on their police and fire departments. Cheshire, we're looking at $6 million. East Haven, $6.5 million. Newtown, $7 million. Millions of dollars those communities are saving could go to other needs. You have the opportunity tonight to make changes to the mayor's proposed budget, and as your constituents, you have a responsibility to listen to us and to act.
And, you know, when I think back, like, those are the moments that really, like, sustained us, you know, when things were getting hard.
One of the things that made things hard was that the residents of the city of New London had some different feelings about the importance of the police.
One of the things that we didn't originally, it wasn't an original demand, but it started to become clear once we started to do the research, was like the actual like presence of police in New London. And that's when the 80 officer ordinance, you know, fight started.
Part 2 of the City of New London's Code of Ordinances, Chapter 15, Officers and Employees, Article 3, Police Department, Section 15-62, Size of the Police Force, it shall be the policy of the City of New London to employ a police force comprised of a minimum of 80 full-time patrolmen and officers, excluding a chief and deputy chief.
Where did this even come from, right? And our research told us, like, it was just a number, like, that someone had thrown out and put onto the charter, which, you know, 80 officers was high, is high for this region.
Communities our size across Connecticut with similar populations have more like 50 or 60 officers.
I want to clarify this piece around 80 officers. So it was removed through people power.
Yes.
And then it was brought back when other folks on the right pushed for it to be brought back.
Yes. It was a referendum that was deliberately excluded from the November regular election. Mm-hmm. It was a referendum that was put in the summer deliberately to exclude many voters who are not going to show up to a like single issue referendum vote, as opposed to it could have been included in the general election, and it was moved to a separate election on purpose, deliberately to sort of manipulate electors and lean heavily on those who always turn out, even if it is for a special election.
When did this happen?
2021?
Yeah. Okay, so we're also in a really rough space pandemic-wise, like a really high mortality space pandemic-wise.
We learned some hard lessons about organizing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we severely underestimated the commitment that the Republicans, you know, on the, you know, south of the hospital, like, you know, were really committed to getting that ordinance back in effect, right? And we underestimated, like, how quickly they could move, right? Like, how quickly, like, that could be organized, and we could, like, sort of walk back what we saw as some progress.
I was a little confused by the use of the term Republican for these voters that wanted the 80-officer ordinance back. New London is really known as a staunchly Democratic city. And we had a discussion about, you know, the difference between party and how people govern.
We've got about 15, 16,000 registered voters in the City of New London of 27, 28,000 people, but only like 3,000, 3,500 vote. And those that vote, you know, the saying here is row A all the way. Mm-hmm. The Democrats show up on line A, row A. Power is so like tightly held within the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. The only way to win is to run as a Democrat.
There have been some relatively high profile issues with the New London Police Department that have been reported primarily in the Day newspaper. And I was interested to learn from Maya and Chris about community and police relations in the city.
As in so many communities, there's a long history of police abuse within the community. I served on the Police Community Relations Committee as a resident volunteer for, I believe, 7 years. In the 70s, some police brutality happened, and the citizen took it to the courts. And a consent decree was passed that required New London Police Department to have a process for residents to file complaints against police officers. This committee was then created a decade or so later to sort of supervise this complaint process. When I read in 2011 an article about this committee, this committee was deliberately created in a way that was supposed to have representative, a broad span of representatives across the community. So there was a dedicated spot for someone from the education community. There was a dedicated spot for someone from the NAACP, someone from the Latino community, gay community, and on. When I read the article at the time, there was a white woman sitting in the Latina seat, and the chair of the committee, a white man, had been sitting in the seat of as chair for 20 years without any sort of re-election. So there was just a whole host of sort of corrupt issues taking place on this one committee that was supposed to provide oversight for residents who were filing complaints against the police department. And that was just sort of just the beginning of a whole host of like awful experiences being a volunteer resident on that committee, of being both on the union police website and on social media. I mean, my experience personally was just being sort of having my character denigrated and both attacked in meetings and again on social media and websites for just calling into question police misconduct.
Chris wasn't the only member of the Police Community Relations Committee to face abuse. Here's some public testimony from the May 3rd New London City Council meeting.
But I do have a pending CHRO case against Michael Passero. They stem from my citizen's complaint from June 2021 against police officers who stalked and harassed me, my fellow PCRC members, other police officers, and NLPD brass on social media and the police union website in staunch opposition to the ethics code of our beloved city.
I think there's just been report after report of police dogs attacking residents, obviously predominantly black and brown residents, drugs being planted on citizens, mm-hmm. local police officers taking pictures of people who've died and like texting them around. I mean, there's the list of abuse within the New London Police Department is... it's impossible. We would need days to talk through it all.
I always think about like what is it that would exact change in this place?
I mean, I think real long-term sustainable change requires us to like reignite the voter base that doesn't vote. Mm-hmm. Like to reignite the 10, 11, 12,000 people who typically don't vote but are registered to, mm-hmm. and give them hope that the system can do something different for them, mm-hmm. and turn out those people so that we can elect different people and we can take back control of the city. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the people's budget talks about like we need to base build. Like we talk about what does it mean to base build, mm-hmm. and we also talk about what does it mean to escalate in such a way that those in power are forced to make different decisions. But until we have the power, any escalation, even if it does create change, and our movement has created change, to me will only be short term. Until we have folks in the positions of power who are actually committed to New London serving New Londoners?
Yes. I think the short answer is yes. The longer answer is I think people are like desperate for something to believe in, right? And need to feel like the vote will matter. And, you know, that's part of the work that we've talked about. And like, I think we've also considered long term, what does it look like to work on a few different tiers? Like, what does it look like to go for statewide legislation that would then impact districts, right? But we also know, like, the real, you know, the fights are won locally.
On May 23rd of 2023, the New London City Council approved a $102 million city and school budget. This included $56.2 million in city government spending. 43% of this comprises the majority of public safety, which includes police and fire budgets. It was very similar to what the mayor had put forward. There had been some last-minute attempts on the part of two counselors to add money to both the Public Works Department and to education, but both of those attempts failed. The people's budget demands for increased dollars for youth services and the Human Services Department budget and for the Department of Education and Public Works were not met either. What was very clear at that hearing, though, was how deeply personal this process had been for both the counselors and members of the people's budget. Here's how one community member describes her experiences.
Having built relationships with almost all of you, I can't even get you to have a conversation with me on the street. So I think that it's time for us really to come together and realize that, again, once you all are no longer elected or you decide not to run anymore, we're still going to be neighbors. We still need to be cordial, and the work still needs to be done.
We keep at it. We keep speaking, and we keep organizing, and we keep base building, and we start campaigning, and we find community members who want to run to truly represent New Londoners' needs, and we fight to get them elected, and then we fight to hold them accountable once they're elected.
Mm-hmm. Good evening, everyone. My name is Maya Shepherd. As a proud resident of New London, I'm the executive director of Hearing Youth Voices and a proud member of the People's Budget Coalition, advocating for not only an equitable and dignified budget, but a fair and participatory budget process. My mother and all of the young people that sit behind you and that I've had the pleasure of working with are why I sit here today. I'm not sure the source of all of your stories and how you got here tonight. Whatever the reason, we urge you to remember it tonight. And in a short time, when you announce your campaigns and urge your community to support you and your cause, we'll see you there and we will remember.
I asked Maya and Chris how other people could help New London with the people's budget, and this was Chris's response.
I think getting involved in their own mm-hmm. municipal budget process in their community, I think the more people's budget campaigns spread across the state and country, the more our individual efforts will sort of power and ignite the others. I think we are strengthened by the efforts going on across the country.
Well, beautiful listeners, that's our time for today. I want to give a special thanks to Maya Shepherd, Chris Raitt, and the whole Hearing Youth Voices team, as well as all the people supporting the People's Budget. A special thank you goes out to Kella Parker for singing the Black National Anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing, composed by James Weldon Johnson. See you next time. Thanks.